Yeah, I
But
mean, I agree.
I'm
I'm a
sorry, go
Nika
ahead.
fan. I'm just a huge Nika fan. When I think about, there are some teams in the league that could use defensive-minded guards. I mean, that was one thing I know. I think New York, with them at 11, it's just ideas. I try to think about where players could go, and I've talked about teams that need defense, and maybe they don't need scoring, but they need someone that can come in and lock up, and that can also hit open shots. And Nika, with her, that defensive mentality, and that was, it's one of my favorite performances I've ever seen. So I think that, Nika, to me, I could see her going in the first round easily with some of those teams that need a defensive minded guard.
All right, thank you. We're
Thank
going to
you.
turn next to Cora. Cora, go ahead.
Hi, thanks guys for doing this. I appreciate it. Dre, I wanted to ask you about Rakia Jackson, just what we saw from her in the final month of the season, and especially against South Carolina and the pick and roll as a playmaker, how much more willing she seemed to shoot the three. Just what do you make of her last kind of portion of her college career, and what that means for how she'll, translate into the WNBA this summer?
Yeah, I think with Rakia, she's special. I was talking to one of our film, one of the, her name's Erin Gutierrez. We're creating a film about Rakia, and we were comparing, moves. She can make post moves. She can make guard moves. Like, she's so versatile, and she has the ability to hit tough shots. So I think her ability to do that at times at Tennessee, she was the only option sometimes for the Lady Vols, to my angst at times. And for her to be on a professional floor with the defensive 3 seconds and players around her where she can have space to operate, I could see her again hitting some of those tough shots and being aggressive in moments where she needs to. Rakia also has the ability to pass, whether it's a skip pass or anything like that. So I see Rakia with her shot making and thinking aggressive, making an impact on a team in the W. Like, tough shot making translates, and you would think she'll have a little more space to operate at the next level.
All right, thanks. I'm going to turn next to Jonathan Williams. Jonathan, you're going to be followed by Eric Wilson. Jonathan.
Hi guys. Can either of you kind of describe what your ideal situation would be for Camila Cardoso to come into? Just an ideal situation for her to come in and perform and kind of translate to the WNBA as quickly as possible. And if either of you have a team in mind that would have that situation for her, what would it be?
Any player's ideal situation is a lot of minutes, period. Especially for a rookie coming into this league, it's really hard to make a team, number one. And then when you do, it's hard to sometimes get on the floor. But where she will get picked, she will have those opportunities. If she goes to, two or four to LA, or she goes three to Chicago, these are teams where she will get minutes. And that's what you want. When you're a high draft pick, the tough thing is you're going to a team that is in the lottery because they haven't had a lot of success. So you can't necessarily expect success right away as a lottery pick in terms of wins and losses, but you want to get better. You want to prove to yourself and everyone else the type of player that you are, how your game translates. And with her, with any of those teams, whether it's LA or Chicago, she's going to have that opportunity to really show what she can do.
All right, I'm going to turn next to Eric. Eric, you're going to be followed by Jackie Powell. Eric.
Appreciate everybody's time. Thank you. Question real quick for Drea. Drea, if you could just speak to, working and collaborating with Carolyn Peck, yourself, L. Duncan, Chiney, just what that experience has been like, and just to see the evolution.
It's a dream. It's honestly incredible to be in a space. It's funny with what Rebecca and just giving that answer on Camilla. I was thinking, like, any rookie wants to go in a situation where they can also be themselves and play to their strengths, and they're not asked to do anything that they're not capable of because their teammates are just as good, right? And that's what it feels like, and that's what it felt like at the desk with Carolyn and with the team that we had. It just felt like everyone could be the best version of themselves, and that fit with everyone else for us to reach the end goal of having great broadcasts. And so, with that group, and then Rebecca included, like, we were getting texts from Rebecca and Ryan and Holly, and everyone, like, everyone was would just text us like, great show. So I think the for me to be myself and to have so much fun, and again, be able to play to my strengths, It was special. And to like be at the desk, you know, we're giving stats on the last time the Big Ten won a national championship. It was Carolyn Peck leading the way. Like to be next to Hall of Famers and L. Duncan and, you know, Chinee. For me, I just like looked to my right and looked to my left and I'm like, how did I get here? Because L's the greatest. We have Aaliyah Boston, Rookie of the Year, so many accolades. Chinee Agumike won a Wooden Award, played in the WNBA. So for me, it was just it's an honor to be next to them, to learn with them and play off of them. And they're great colleagues, but they're great friends. So it's I was honored every show to be up there.
All right, thanks. We're going to go to Jackie Powell. Jackie, you're going to be followed by PJ. Jackie.
Hello, all. Thanks for the time. I've got one for each Rebecca and Drea, if that's all right.
Jackie, we're probably going to keep it to one, okay, because I want to get to some of your colleagues.
Okay, all right. I will. So for Rebecca, you mentioned earlier that you could see Cardoso going at two. That would mean she'd be going over Cameron Brink. I'm just curious as to what could be a reason that you might see that happening.
I think Cameron Brink's going to go too. I wouldn't be shocked if Cardoso went too. And I think part of that is you have to put the pieces into the Jenga game or into the puzzle. And however that plays out, if you think that, all right, Chicago's not going to take Brink at three, but they might take Cardoso at three, then you roll the dice and say, all right, then I'm going to take Cardoso at two, assume they don't take Brink at three, and then I can also get her at four. I do think Brink is going to go second. But I would not be shocked if there's some of that kind of stuff in play.
All right, thanks. We're going to turn to PJ. PJ, you're up.
Great. Thanks a lot. This is for Drea. You talked earlier about how the league needs defensive-minded guards. What do you think about Helena Pollo from Arizona and how her, I guess, last couple of months of the season went? I mean, she was always known as a defensive player, and in the last few months, she sort of took her team, the other six players, put them on her back. And they made that run into the NCAA tournament. How do you think her stock is has sort of risen? And what do you think of her showing out that she's sort of an all-around player now?
PJ, that question was for.
Oh, sorry, it was for Drea.
Okay,
Yeah,
Drea.
I think with Helena, like there are just some specific games I remember. You know, they had a stretch where they played like Stanford, USC, UCLA, and then they played USC again. And her in those games was impressive for me. I want to say it was like she had two games with five steals back to back. And she had one game with, you know, seven assists, six assists, five assists. One, you know, I think it was against USC the second time, like end of March. Six assists, six steals, and you're like, okay, yeah, she can also score. Like she's in double figures, but she's also making passes. She's also making plays on the defensive end. So I think that Helena definitely her stock rose as just being like an all-around player, like someone that can come in the game and do thing whatever her team needs, making the right pass, active on defense, or scoring. So I think I've always liked Helena's game. So I think that those are just some that really stand out to me. I want to say in the overtime game against USC, I think she had like 20 points and 9 rebounds, or it was 21 points, 9 rebounds. I'm like, yeah, she's super active, and has the ability to score. So I do think that I like her game.
Actually, we're going to go to Brad Brown. Brad, you're up.
Question for, I'll start with Rebecca. We talk about Caitlin coming into the league, the basketball part of it that she brings, but just from a city franchise, sort of feels like a generational shift in something that's coming to Indiana on this one. Can you make a comparison to anything previously that felt like this, or is this just, you've talked about it at the top being unique?
There's no comparison that I can find on the women's side, and I've been in this league since the very beginning. We haven't seen a player drive ticket sales like this. We haven't seen a player drive ratings like this. I mean, look at the ratings the last 4 or 5 games she played. I mean, and it's something that she'd been doing all season long, never anything to this degree. And to me, what one of the things that's kind of special about it is that she's staying in the Midwest, going to Indiana. It's such a perfect fit in terms of that. You know, would she have done great no matter where she goes? Of course. But a fit in Indiana, maybe the other one would have been Minnesota, but just seems kind of perfect. You know, the hero of the Heartland is going to be staying there and leading this team. But in terms of attention, we've never, ever, ever seen anything like this. We've had great game players come into the league. People were excited. What's Brittany Griner going to look like in the WNBA? What's Diana Taurasi going to look like? We've had that. Never anything close to this.
All right, thanks. We're going to go to Brad Lake, staying with the Brads. Brad Lake, you're up.
Yes. Hi, ladies. We all know the big names that are going in the first round. Can you speak of any, like, diamonds in the rough, maybe some players that you think could go second round, third round, that people aren't really talking about?
I'll let Rebecca.
Of course you will. You know, the hardest part of this conversation every year is, you know, the reality is that second and third round picks have a really hard time making WNBA rosters. Certain first round picks that go late have hard time making WNBA rosters. You know, we talk about a league of 144. It's not a league of 144. Most of these teams, or at least many of these teams, only carry 11 players. And maybe by the end of the season, they can carry a 12th. Have there been second and third round players that make rosters? Absolutely. You know, but it's tough. And I think you're also going to see some teams draft internationally this year, whether it's a couple of players from Australia or from France. And sometimes the reason they draft those players is because they don't have the room this year to have them on their roster. Liz Kitley, Mackenzie Holmes, two players who will get drafted this year as what we would call a deferral pick, because a team might not have room on their roster this year, but know these are players who could help them in the future. One player who is interesting to me as maybe a sleeper in the first round is Markeisha Davis from Ole Miss. She is an elite level athlete who is a player who a team might not necessarily expect to help them this year, but has a huge upside because of her athletic ability. So, you know, that's one player that could be like a sleeper in the first round. But again, I can't overstate. This is the hardest league to make a roster spot. And, you know, draft night is really exciting. And so we don't want to necessarily talk about how hard it is on draft night, because the second and third rounders, you know, have just had their dreams come true. But it's hard. It's hard. And we've even seen in recent years, first round picks who aren't able to stick their rookie year. So it's tough. It's tough to find, you know, that diamond in the rough who might make a roster in the second and third round.
All right, we have time for just a couple more. We're going to go to Courtney Harden. Courtney, you're up.
Thank you for taking my question. I wanted to ask both of you guys about Angel Reese. What do you guys see her fitting in, and how does her game translate from college to the WNBA?
Well, I remember I was talking with Chinee, and Chinee obviously being in the league and coming into the league as a rookie, like rebounding translates, rebounding and relentless energy and, you know, playing with that spark. I know so many times this season I called Angel relentless, you know, Angel relentless Reese, and, you know, spending time watching Angel in practice sometimes, like Angel's a thinker. She likes to think the game. She likes to learn the game. And so I actually think she would do really well, you know, learning from veterans and listening and doing whatever the team needed. But I think the rebounding immediately would be something that would translate the rebounding and energy for Angel.
All right, thank you. We're going to go to Caroline. Caroline, you're up.
Thank you very much for the time. This one's either for Drea or Rebecca. If you could evaluate Liz Kitley, I know Rebecca just said she will be a deferral pick, obviously because of the injury, but you know what she brings to the table when she's healthy, and how Kenny Brooks and his staff succeeded in her development and the growth of her skill set over her time at Virginia Tech.
I can talk about Liz. You know, she brings great size at 6'6" with a good wingspan. You know, she certainly developed her skill set under Kenny. You know, she went from a player who early on in her career could get knocked off balance a little bit to they started using that to her advantage. All right, if you're going to get knocked off balance, let's perfect your little, you know, fadeaway shot that she has. And, you know, one GM or coach was telling me, you know, she was a stock riser, you know, the last month of her career because she was consistently putting up, you know, 20 and 10 kind of numbers and could be unstoppable at times in the college game and prove that she could be a consistent backup five in the WNBA. You know, it's tough with some of the athletes that play her position in the league in terms of defensively how her game will translate, but certainly a player, especially now that you're going to have a year to either work with her or help her rehab and get to her to where you want her to be next season. But certainly a player who I think a lot of coaches, GMs think can be a player who can help them again at that backup five spot.
All right, thanks. We have time for two more, and then we're going to bring in our four general managers. I'm going to go first to Chris Carlson. Chris, if you would, please, and then Emily Adams, and that will wrap this portion. Chris.
Rebecca, I worry this is a little related to your comment about how difficult it is to make the league, but Syracuse's De'Asia Fair was obviously a tremendous scorer at Syracuse. How do you see her fitting in the WNBA, where teams probably know who their primary scorers are? And if her role isn't primary scorer, what other attributes does she have to show to sort of stick?
Yeah, I've heard of her name mentioned as a potential late first round, early to mid second round pick. And of course, her size is an issue because she's so small. But she is a player who can get her shot off, you know, especially in a system that likes to push the pace. She is somebody who could come in as a backup guard and really do that well, especially when she was at Buffalo. You know, the past couple of years, she's been a primary scorer at Syracuse. When she was at Buffalo, there were times where she was really a facilitator. So people know that she can do that. She can make shots. And, you know, at times in a league that can have some prejudice against small guards, she's certainly a small guard that is worth taking a risk on because of those things that she can do. She pushes pace really well. She can create and make her own shot, often from deep range. And she does have the ability to get others involved.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks. We're going to turn to Emily Adams. This will be the last question for our ESPN guests, and then we will turn it over to the GMs. Emily.
Hi, guys. For either of y'all, I know Rebecca mentioned earlier with Nika being, you know, one of the biggest risers from the tournament and Camilla as well. I mean, just how much do you guys see GMs and coaches weigh, you know, a moment in the tournament versus sort of a body of work, especially because the draft is so close to the end of the season?
You know, I think body of work is always important because consistency is something that's important, but I do think that there's something to be said about like meeting the moment and in a very high pressure situation performing well and doing exactly what your team needs for success. When you know, there are times where you could fold or there are times where the pressure could be too much. And so for players to rise to the occasion and to have that momentum, you know, even if it was like with Nika with a loss, but that performance was incredible. And so I think meeting the moment and rising to the occasion is definitely something that can not sway, but that has to be taken into consideration because it's a very high pressure situation.
I think a little more recently, people are less a prisoner of the moment than they have been in the past. And even talking to people saying, you know, is there a diamond in the rough out there? Is there a player that's kind of under the radar? And people will respond, you don't really find those anymore because the scouting budgets and the resources that WNBA teams have now, they're out seeing everybody, the ability to watch every game on television. They really have a great knowledge base for the players that they're considering in the draft. But to Dre's point, on the biggest stage, how are you going to perform? And in Nika's case specifically against, you know, the most prolific offensive player in the game, how do you perform a few games after going against the fourth or fifth most prolific offensive player with De'Asia Fair. And then, of course, you know, everybody who is has a high pick and everybody in the first round is doing their interviews now and seeing how that part of the piece fits together as well. But, you know, I think with the resources that WNBA teams are putting into scouting now, they have a very good idea of what they're looking at by the time draft day rolls around.